Your name?
My name is Sara Jayaraman with the Restaurant Opportunity Centers United.
Today you released a report, the Rock National Diner's Guide. Explain this.
Basically, consumers have been asking us for the last 10 years, where can we eat that where we know that workers are being treated well? Everywhere we go, all over the country, people ask us this, and so this guide is our response, how consumers can engage, where they can eat, what they can do to support living wages and good conditions for restaurant workers.
One of the things it says is 213 is not enough.
That's right. The federal tip minimum wage in this country is $2.13, which is a shame for the world's leading nation. $2.13, what that means for workers is that many of them are homeless. They don't have the ability to pay rent. Tips fluctuate, and so $2.13 plus tips often sometimes means less than the minimum wage, $5, $6 an hour. It's just not enough for people to survive. So that's why the median wage in the restaurant industry is below the poverty line. So it's why most restaurant workers in the U.S. Are in poverty.
Occupational segregation, can you talk about that issue?
Absolutely. So the restaurant industry does have some living wage jobs. Unfortunately, they're held almost exclusively by white men. And so occupational segregation means that workers are often not allowed into those living wage jobs, which happen to be wait staff and bartending positions and fine dining restaurants. You generally don't see workers of color in those positions. It also means that workers of color are concentrated in lower level segments, so in casual restaurants or in fast food, but you don't often see them in the finest dining restaurants serving your food. And that's a real issue. It means that workers of color don't have the opportunity to get to those jobs where they can get wages that allow them to support their families.
You discussed the difference between diversity and equal opportunity.
That's right. So the restaurant industry loves to talk about how wonderfully diverse it is, how workers of all nations all over the earth come and work in this industry, and it's true. Unfortunately, as I just said, most workers of color are concentrated in the lowest paid positions and the lowest paid segments. So it's great that there's lots of workers of color in the industry. That doesn't mean they have equal opportunity to get to those living wage jobs.
We're here at Eatonville. Across the street is Busboys and Poets, and owner Andy Shalal was one of the ones who spoke. Just did a chance to look a bit through the diner's guide, and I saw Ben's Chili Bowl had favorable ratings. So you have some local, and I guess throughout the country, some owners that are doing the right thing.
Yes, that's right. There are what we call high road employers. We've got about 50 employers like Andy Shalal all over the country who do the right thing, provide good wages and good working conditions, and are partnering actively with Rock to improve the industry.
Who are some of the ones that aren't doing the right thing?
Unfortunately, right now, we've had workers approach us in multiple cities from the Capital Grille Steakhouse, which is part of the Darden Restaurant Company, which is the world's largest restaurant company. It also owns chains such as Olive Garden and Red Lobster. Workers have approached us from this company saying that they've faced racial discrimination, occupational segregation. The company also, unfortunately, does pay this ridiculously low tip minimum wage of $2.13 in much of the country and does not provide paid sick days. And so beyond kind of not meeting the criteria that the guide says are most important for workers, beyond that, unfortunately, it's also been charged with racial discrimination by many workers of color who can't get up to those living wage jobs in the restaurant.
Is Rock a union?
No, absolutely not. Rock is a nonprofit organization, an association of workers all over the country. We are supportive of union efforts, and we work in collaboration with those organizations, but we ourselves are an organization of workers. We also have employers and now consumers. So we are a multi-stakeholder organization.
Can you talk about the value of a high publicity campaign like you had in New York and the chilling effect, I guess, it sends to other employers who would be prone to doing the wrong thing?
Yes. So in New York, we've won 10 campaigns against large fine dining restaurant companies that have engaged in tip theft or racial discrimination or sexual harassment. And we've won $5 million in stolen tips and wages and discrimination payments and huge policy changes for thousands of workers. And so we've seen when those things have happened that other employers in the city have really changed their ways because they see the industry leaders changing their ways. And so when we launch a campaign to change conditions, as conflictual as it might be, nevertheless, that is the only way oftentimes to get employers to see that there are consequences for engaging in these kind of really low road practices.
Andy Shalal, amongst others, pointed out that there is a movement to ask about where food comes from and ensure that it was, you know, properly treated, the animals and growing. But the same movement has not been going on quite as long with regards to the workers who handle the food and make it all this possible.
That's right. We argue that sustainable food has to include sustainable labor practices. You know, you could have great organic chicken, but if the person who cooks that chicken and serves it to you is in poverty or sick, you're going to be served organic food by sick hands, impoverished hands. It really doesn't make for a sustainable meal. And so we are really encouraging consumers to see beyond issues of locally sourced, organic, and sustainable, to really think of sustainability as including workers.
Speaking of sick, can you talk about paid sick days?
90% of restaurant workers that we've surveyed nationwide, and we've surveyed more than 4,000, do not have access to paid sick days, which means that about two-thirds report cooking, preparing, and serving food while sick. And that's truly disgusting. It's disgusting for workers. It's disgusting for consumers. It's a public health risk. And it creates a lot of insecurity, economic instability, and insecurity for workers who, if they get really sick, face losing their job because they can't come to work.
You released this report as we head into December. It's the the month where the most restaurant eating takes place.
That's right. This is the high season, and so that's why we released this guide today, because we want people to use this throughout the holidays, really use it to eat out, get it out to their friends and, you know, colleagues, let people know. These are the places to eat. If you're going to eat in other places, talk to workers, talk to employers.
Any comments on gender here?
Absolutely. Part of the issue of occupational segregation is women not being allowed to advance to the very highest tipped positions. You'll find women often as servers in some of these fine dining restaurants, but in the finest dining restaurants, you won't find them as servers or managers or, for example, captains or sommelier in the really, really fine dining restaurants. And so while you do find women in the front of the house, you often do not find them in the highest tip positions. And women of color in particular are very concentrated in fast food.
While much of industry in the U.S. Seems to have gone overseas, this is one of the, it's first of all, a very large industry we all eat and growing.
That's right. It's one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. 75% of Americans eat out once a week. It's not going anywhere. And so this is an industry that is truly American. It's here to stay. We've got to make sure it represents our values as consumers.
Any final thoughts you care to share?
I just would really encourage everybody to take a look at the guide, to use it, to talk to workers, to talk to employers, to let legislators know that $2.13 is not acceptable in the industry that touches us every day.
I guess one more question that brings up. Are these low wages because owners are not making money?
Absolutely not. Darden brings in $500 million a year in revenue in a $16 billion industry. They're doing quite well. They're growing. If there weren't enough money to go around, why would the industry be growing? If they couldn't pay their workers sustainable wages, why are they able to do that in some states where the minimum wage is higher and not in other states? Why just across the border in Toronto is the tip minimum wage $9.50? Why can the Red Lobster afford $9.50 for workers in Toronto and not in the United States? It's simply a matter of political will and political power.
Thank you so much.
No problem.